What are sort of some of the initiatives that 7-Eleven are running right now, and how do you invest in your people?
We 100% know that people want investment in their growth and their career. Growing is not about attending a training program, but actually growing and growing skills and experiences come from doing. If your whole realm on the job is just online through a Teams meeting or a Zoom, then your learning is going to be limited.
I'm reading a book at the moment based on the Harvard study on happiness and what makes a good life. The single factor that study has shown is relationships. We can have all the most wonderful tech and systems in the world, but that human connection, you really only can get from being face-to-face with someone.
The other thing that I get worried about is the mental health of our society. Social isolation is not good for our mental health or our physical health. Well, a lot of people actually think career is hierarchical. Career means stepping up a ladder. It's not how I see it at all. Career is...
Sharon and Catherine, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast. I am honored to have you on today. I'm really excited to have this conversation. So for those of the audience, obviously don't know who you are, don't know where you work, let's just start there. So Sharon, I'm going to come to you first. Who are you? What's your role? What's your background? Tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Thank you. Very excited to be here as well. My name is Sharon Beaumont. Currently, I lead the people function here at 7-Eleven Australia. Been here for 6.5 years. And the function in 7-Eleven looks after all things to do with the employment life cycle, as well as our ways of working, our culture, our reputation externally, and the workplaces that we operate in. So maybe I'll just stop there and get Catherine to introduce herself, and then we can go further if we need to.
So just quickly, a very small role then, Sharon, nothing too major that you've got to look after there. So we're going to come and dig into
that. Right.
I'm excited to dive in more. Catherine, over to you.
Thanks, Georgie. So Catherine Murray, I'm a product owner at 7-Eleven in the people space, so part of Sharon's department. As a product owner, I look after our enterprise capability squad. So I get to work off a couple of really exciting, I guess, pieces of work that touch the whole enterprise. So things like leadership, like diversity, inclusion, belonging, like change. So some really meaty, challenging but interesting pieces of work that I've got some fabulous people in my squad who are leaders across the business themselves in those spaces. So getting to work with them.
Amazing. Well, like I said, I truly am honored to have you both on. And I will just quickly say this before we dive into a bit more about 7-Eleven and all the incredible work you're both doing. But I can honestly say I've worked with a lot of companies in the last 10 years of recruitment. And when I walk through the doors of 7-Eleven, I instantly feel welcome. I instantly feel that I belong. I instantly feel greeted. And people generally seem happy to work there. And that just says a lot, because I am a big believer of like energy. You know, you can just pick it up. You know, some places you walk into, you go, ooh, and some places you walk into, you go, oh, this feels good. So you're doing something right, which is why I really wanted to get you on today to dive into that. And also just absolutely honored to be working with you sort of, you know, really closely and all the incredible things that you're doing as well, which we'll go into. But I just want to pause and just say you're doing something really well. So let's dig into that, because there's a lot of companies that out there right now would probably love to improve their culture, improve their D&I and really sort of build something incredible. So with that being said, Sharon, I'm going to come to you next. So as you mentioned at the start, like you've got a huge role and you've been there now for over 6 years, which is a long time to be with a company. So I'd love to sort of dive in now to the nuts and bolts of your role, how that has evolved over time, and even perhaps like reflecting over the last 6 years, what are you most proud of and what do you feel like you've done really well to create such a fantastic team and culture within the business?
Well, thank you. And thank you for your compliments earlier. Look, 7-Eleven is a joy to work for. And I think one of the, I'll go into my role in a sec, but one of the things that I love about working here and right from when I joined up until now is they really, as an organization, take people seriously, and the culture is incredibly important. Happy to share our journey in that shortly, but a little bit more on what we do in the People Center of Excellence on behalf of the business. So we have 8,500 people across our network in WA, Victoria, New South Wales and Queensland. And our job as a Center of Excellence is to design all the right programs and the right processes and the right ways of working, the right structures to ensure that we can engage those people, as you said, make them happy and create all the conditions which A, helps them and their well-being, but also helps our company to achieve what we need to achieve. I've seen like lots of change in the 6.5 years that I've been here. I would say one of the biggest things I'm proud of is how we've really modernized the people function in this business, and then the way all of our employees think about what is required to be happy in the culture that's required and the leadership capability and so forth. So there's been a lot that's changed over the last 6.5 years. And interestingly, I was pulling out some data just recently on our employee net promoter score and our turnover rates just in the last 3 years. And both of those have improved materially just in the last 3 years. And that started with our agile transformation in our office, which was all about building business agility. So agility for the business and empowerment for our people. And that's probably one of the things I am most proud of at our organization in the time that I've been here. I think it's a competitive asset for the business and has step changed how we operate and how we work. And it does all the things that I believe in, really clear direction, really aspirational goals, and then getting out of the way of people so that they can be empowered to do their work and achieve what they need to achieve in the best way possible. The other aspect that I like, and you mentioned it, Georgie, is around our culture and also our purpose. So over the last 6 years, we've spent a lot of time defining our purpose as an organization. What do we stand for? Who are we? And our culture, which is how do we expect people to behave each and every day in each and every moment? And we designed that and put that into place and defined that a number of years ago and then integrated it across the business. And I think with your feedback on how you feel the vibe when you come into 7-Eleven, that's exactly the best way to describe it. And that's another piece of work that I really am proud of, and the way the team have defined that and integrated it into our business. So it does feel like it's part of our DNA. But the other part, which is really, really important, is our role as a people center of excellence is to manage and oversee the life cycle of any employee, whether they be a team member in our stores or a category manager in our office. And that is, how do we attract people into our business? What's our recruitment process? How do we onboard people really, really effectively? What's our role in continuing to grow people and develop their careers, as well as measure and recognize and reward performance? And partly that's what we pay people, but partly that's other aspects that make people feel valuable in their contributions. And I think the pride you get in being part of a department that does that for 8,500 people and positively can impact how they feel, I think that's one of the things I feel the most proud about.
Incredible, and absolutely as you should. And it's so true, isn't it? Because when people think culture, some people think beers on a Friday, ping pong tables, and actually it's a feeling, I think, that you get when you work in an organization. And I think that's exactly that. That's exactly how I feel when I walk in the doors at 7-Eleven. It is a feeling that people generally want to be here. So that's something incredible. There's a few things I want to come back to, Sharon, because you've picked out a few really key elements that I think are so important when it comes to culture and keeping your people. And one of those is growth, seeing potential and really sort of helping develop it, which brings me on to Catherine, because you are a walking, talking example of that. So you started your career at 7-Eleven as a graduate, and now you are a product owner, and I'm sure you're going to go on to do some incredible things at 7-Eleven. So talk to me about that journey and How have you, because obviously 7-Eleven, yes, have supported you, but you've also had to shine. You've also had to put your hand up. You've also had to be visible to create this opportunity for yourself. So what has that journey been like for you from starting as a graduate to where you are today? And any particular advice for those people that perhaps are new to a role or starting out in their career? What do you think that you, what's enabled your success?
Yeah, wow, what a question. It's pretty daunting when you think back. I have been at 7-Eleven for over 5 years now, which seems to have just flown by. And starting as a graduate, I had no idea what I was in for or what I was signing up to. But what a wonderful time it's been. And obviously I do enjoy working here because I'm still here. So it's been quite a diverse journey, I suppose, in terms of the different roles that I've worked in, the different departments that I've been part of, and then obviously being here before and after the agile transformation that the business went through and seeing that transition to the different ways that we work and how we show up. I think probably starting out as a graduate and having the privilege, I suppose, to work across many different functions and through many different roles really helped me to not only get a good grasp on the way that the business works, but the different dynamics that play out across the business, whether it was, you know, I spent 6 months working across our store network or, you know, deep in our marketing department as well. So really getting that full breadth of experience was so useful. And still in the work that I do today, I often refer back to that time and the lessons that I learned, particularly spending time in stores. I think that has set me up for success, I suppose. Then you have just a deeper appreciation and understanding of everything that we do by really, truly getting into store land. So that was huge. But I also think it was probably about 2 years into working at 7-Eleven that I really sort of branched out and started to create a bit of a network of people within the business that I would really just ask for help from. And whether that was personal questions, life advice, mentoring, sponsorship, those kinds of conversations I think have stood me in good stead and served me well throughout my career. And I think it's those sort of opportunities that sometimes we cannot put time or value into. So spending the time to go and ask someone like Sharon at the beginning of when I worked at 7-Eleven, hey, would you mind being my mentor? Or can we catch up for a coffee and talk about this? And I was a bit nervous doing that to start out. I was laughing with Sharon about it the other day because I would come so overprepared to those meetings, you know, with notes and questions and had put hours of thought into how I was going to structure our maybe half hour chat. But those conversations have really served me well. And I think it's pushing yourself to put yourself out there and believe in yourself and back yourself that you're worth that time as well. And to say, you know, my career here matters and the leaders here believe in me as well. And the leaders want to see the people across the business thrive and be their best. And so actually taking the time to use the resources that you have available to you. So not being afraid to ask, particularly senior leaders, because there can often be a perception that, oh no, they're too busy, I shouldn't ask them for that time. I think 7-Eleven does a really good job of, Agile ensures for a flat structure, so it's not like they're unreachable, but you can almost believe it if you tell yourself that story that, oh, I shouldn't be questioning or asking for time in people's diaries. You know, everybody's busy. And it is true, everyone is busy. But generally, people like to chat and people love to give advice. So it's just making those connections with people across the business that have been really now, I think I look back at it, it's been probably the most enjoyable time I've spent has been connecting and building relationships across the business, but has also really served you know, when you're trying to get work done and you know who to go to in the business or who to ask that question of, whether it be a simple thing like help with Excel or you know, much bigger or meaningful work, then it's really powerful.
I think that just illustrates so many things to me, Catherine. One, you took the initiative to ask. I think there's so many people that would love to progress in their career, but they don't have the courage to first ask. And secondly, the fact that, you know, 7-Eleven have an agile environment where people feel like they can go up to leaders and say, hey, look, I'm struggling with this, or I'd love some help with this, or hey, can you mentor me? I think it's just a perfect balance of both of you taking initiative and also having an organization that can offer that to you. So that's just an incredible story, and one that I think so many companies would really benefit from hearing as well. But Catherine, Sharon, I want to come back to you because you've mentioned something that is really, really important. You've spoken a lot about growth and investing in your people. And honestly, one of the main reasons that I see people leaving organizations is because they don't feel valued. They don't feel like they've been invested in. So I'd love to really dive in now of like, how does 7-Eleven go about even identifying talent within the business? Because it's so much more beneficial to invest in your people rather than constantly going out and attracting more talent. So I think if you can get that internal piece right before you start bringing in people externally, it's so important and can just make such a big difference to the culture, your bottom line, so many benefits from doing this. So what are sort of some of the initiatives that 7-Eleven are running right now, and how do you invest in your people? Any sort of light you can shed on that would be amazing.
Yeah, that again, another big question. I think we 100% know that people want investment in their growth and their career. One of the things I would start by saying is that growing is not about attending a training program, and that's a little bit of information gaining, but actually growing and growing skills and experiences come from doing, and so our entire agile design that we've put into place is all about growth. It's all predicated, to be honest, on learning. It's about trying new things, iterating those things, learning from what's worked and what hasn't, and then trying something else. It's about being part of a team or a squad that has a whole mix of people in it. And so you are learning each and every moment you have a conversation with your team because they might have a different skill set to you. So just the very nature of work and the very nature of how agile is set up in our office, I think really drives growth and learning. It is a change though for people to get used to, because a lot of people actually think career is hierarchical. So career means stepping up a ladder. That's not how I see it at all. Career is what you do to spend your time at work and how you continue to grow and improve and get satisfaction in what you do. And that will change over time, and it changes with every, you know, phase of your life as to what that needs to be. As Catherine said, our structure is fairly flat, so a hierarchical career is not the answer at 7-Eleven. That doesn't mean there isn't roles with greater spans and responsibility that you can get experience on, but the experience comes through work. And the structure that we have in place is that everyone has their own, I guess, craft coach. So based on whatever skill you have a chapter lead whose job it is to continue to grow you and make sure that you are engaged and contributing in the best way possible. And that structure is quite unique in our structure compared to others. Other structures have a manager that needs to drive the work and also build the people, whereas we've split that role. And so Catherine's role as a product owner is to drive the work. She sits under a chapter lead, Steve, whose job it is to grow Catherine. And so we've really deliberately put into place a structure in the office here whereby it is all about learning and growth and building capability. On top of that, obviously, there's formal learning programs as well, and we can go into those. But if I just pause there and go back to our stores, and you know, that's 93% of our people is in our stores. We've spent a lot of time in the last couple of years really defining the career path for people in stores. It's a little more traditional in stores, so we haven't put agile into our stores, but we've been very clear about the capabilities needed for a team member, an assistant store manager, and a store manager, and have got programs in place whereby we can grow and develop people through that career path. we know, as you've said, that if we appoint from within, particularly into our store manager roles, their performance and their retention, their likelihood to stay is much, much greater than going externally. And so building out those programs and continuing to improve how we support those people to grow in their careers is really important. And it's starting to show dividends. Our turnover's reduced by about 50% in our store leader population in the past 12 months because that's become very, very clear. So I think there's a lot of other things that you do to grow people and build people and support people, but I would say they are the strong or the backbone of what we do here at 7-Eleven. I do believe the culture that you create, as we started talking about early, becomes really, really important. And that is that people matter, and how they feel matters and what they do matters. And I think if you've got processes and systems in place to set that up and reward that, then you will find that you've got people who want to come and work here and also stay here.
I love that. Catherine, any thoughts on what Sharon has just said? I mean, you're experiencing it firsthand as well. Like, how does it make you feel working for an organization, coming into work every day, knowing that you're being seen, valued, heard, and invested in? Like, what difference does that generally make in your working life?
I think it's interesting because the first place my mind goes to is, how could you have it any other way? Like, imagine, you know, coming to work and not feeling like you had a voice or an opinion that mattered, or a support network around you. If there was a problem, you had someone to turn to. I think what a shocking way to have to, you know, go to work. And we spend so much of our time, you know, most of our week we spend at work. We're with, you know, a group of people we don't know before we walk in that door and get that job. And so making sure that we're part in, you know, Sharon and I working in a people department, we're in service of the business. So our roles are service roles. Making sure that we're playing our part in contributing to that culture, contributing in the ways that we can, whether it be, you know, a role like Sharon's or mine or anyone else in the department, that we each have a role to play in creating the culture that that we work in every single day. And so that might be from the smallest interaction you have to, you know, the biggest project that you're a part of or leading for. It sort of doesn't matter, but it's the only way I think you can have people that want to be at work, want to give their all, want to, you know, go the extra mile when they need to, is creating that environment where people want to show up and turn up and be their best and have fun along the way. It's all part of it.
I completely agree. And it's really interesting, the conversations I'm having with a lot of our clients right now. But as we're sort of talking a lot about culture right now, I think one of the biggest challenges that I'm seeing for a lot of businesses is really continuing that good culture in this new hybrid way of work. So I think it's something that a lot of people are really struggling with right now, because, you know, with remote work and then they're sort of like trying to, do they mandate coming back into the office so they have a set day in the office? Like, what's working, what's not? So I'd love to sort of dive into now of how you've gone about transitioning from, you know, maybe 5 days in office to a hybrid way of work. What's gone well? What's maybe still needs improvement? And any advice you'd have for people that are struggling to really keep culture in this new hybrid way of work? So Sharon, maybe I'll come to you first of what your thoughts on that, and what do you think you're doing well, and perhaps some areas where you sort of think we could maybe be doing a little bit better on that, if anything at all.
Yeah, it's such an interesting topic that's been debated for quite a while now. You know, I think the first thing you've got to be clear on is what do you mean by your culture? Have you clearly defined what you want it to be? Have you got it integrated into the way you work, so that if it's clear up front, then it's easier to maintain no matter where work is done? So I think first and foremost, ours was really well defined. It is integrated into the way we work. It is integrated into our employee life cycle. So that gave us a solid foundation. when we went into COVID and were very rapidly forced to work remotely. Where are we at now? It's a really interesting debate, that it's an ongoing debate and conversation that we have as an executive team and as a people team here at 7-Eleven as to what's the right recipe. I really think your culture, depending on what you want it to be, can be strengthened through deliberate action, whether that is remote or not. I do, however, believe there are limitations if it's purely remote working. If your culture, which ours is at 7-Eleven, is a human-based culture, it's a people-based culture, it's about innovation, it's about problem-solving, it's about backing each other and coming together. It's grounded in ethics, grounded in relationships. And I think if work is only done remotely, it's very difficult to continue to build and strengthen relationships. Deep relationships with trust come through connecting with people. Like, you know, there's the transactional side of relationships can be done online, but the deeper trust that you need to be able to have good debate, good innovation, good problem solving, comes from getting to know each other. And I think that is done better face to face. So I think it's an ongoing challenge to manage, you know, everybody's needs in this whole conversation around flexibility and where work gets done. There's the needs of the individual. And, you know, obviously flexibility is so important. It's an important part of what people need in their lives to balance their lives appropriately. It's certainly one of those, a bit like learning and growth and career, it's certainly a key driver for employees when they're looking to go to an employer or to stay with an employer about having the flexibility. But it's not just all one way, and it can't be. It can't be just about an individual. It's also got to be about the group of people that individuals work with and for. But it's also about the organization, because the organization is a collective, which is an organization is just a group of people, right? The organization needs that group of people to do certain things to meet its purpose and its goals. And that can't be done if you just take an individual lens alone. It has to be a collective lens. So there's balancing the needs of the individual, the team and the business that I think makes it a little bit more complex than just having a particular mandate to do X or Y. We at 7-Eleven, though, really believe strongly in our people-based culture. And so we have taken the stance to mandate that our leaders must be face-to-face three days a week. And where possible, our teams should work out what's best for them. But we recommend face-to-face time as being incredibly important to build those relationships and build that side of human side of our culture. You can't really get a vibe like you described, Georgie, if you are just talking online. It just doesn't happen. The relationship remains too transactional. And I think to be really effective as an organization and as a culture, for us anyway, you need to be face-to-face and build those relationships.
I completely agree. And Catherine, we're going to come on to you next, because we were obviously having a really good conversation about this when we were face-to-face. And just for me personally as well, is that I love people. I get lit up being around people. I bounce off people's energy. So for me, hybrid is perfect, because I get to, you know, work from home sometimes and get on top of things so I don't feel overwhelmed, and then go into the office, see the team, see clients and interact. And that just fills my cup so much. So I think a blend of both personally suits me. But Catherine, I know when we were chatting, you were making some really valuable points as well about how you look forward to coming in and seeing certain people. So yeah, talk to me a little bit about like your experience and what you think is working well for you personally as well.
Yeah, I think it's been a bit of a journey for most people, because obviously we went through quite strict lockdowns being in Melbourne and not leaving the house. So it was fully remote working for a while there. I personally got used to that way of working and quite enjoyed, and I know I'm speaking from a privileged position to say I actually enjoyed that time. It did definitely, it did reach its limit there. And now we're in a place where we have this, question of what is the right way to segment our time? How much is the right time to be remote versus in person? But I think I echo what you've both said in that creating that balance and finding that groove is so important. So I think the time that we spend together has to be meaningful, and it has to be well connected. There's no point in coming into the office if you're the only person there. That sort of defeats the purpose. So I know now we've got a few days where we have quite a number of our team in the office, and it is the funnest day of the week. You have the best conversations, the most productive work gets done in terms of fantastic brainstorming and that collaboration. There's certain workshops that if you're able to move around the room and write on sticky notes and get back to, okay, let's just think about this a little bit differently, or creativity, you can't do it in the same way online. And it's that barrier of feeling the energy in the room and the presence of the people that you're talking with. There's a statistic around how much of body language is actually part of our communication, and it's that barrier that online you just aren't able to break through. We can have all the most wonderful tech and systems in the world, but that human connection you really only can get from being face-to-face with someone. So it's probably gone too far the other way now, where I feel quite a sense of FOMO if I'm not in the office, because I'm wondering, what good fun are people having in there that I'm not part of? So it's really nice to find that place. And I think that comes back to, you know, what culture you've created in the office and a reason for people to be in. So having those relationships with people where you want to go in and hear about their weekend and then get into work and spend a couple of hours really in solid, deep work. And know that if there's times where you need to walk away and not talk to anyone and not attend any meetings and not be distracted, maybe it's deep thinking work or reading and things like that, you can actually go away and do that on your days where you're working remotely. So a good balance.
Yeah, I think if I can just add to that, Georgie.
Yes,
there's a couple of other points I think Catherine raised that are really, really important, and particularly when you start to think about learning and growth and career. The incidental conversations that you have when you're face to face are so critically important. That quick, hey, Sharon, what would you do in this position? Or can I ask you a question? That happens when you're face to face, but it doesn't happen if someone's going to make a meeting to talk to you online. And so I think there's a lot more opportunity for learning and those incidental moments of growth when you're face to face. The other thing that I get worried about is it's the mental health of our society, and there's a whole lot of research that shows that social isolation is not good for our mental health or our physical health, and so I do worry if people are mostly working remotely by themselves about how that is going to play out into their overall well-being over time. We are human beings, are a social race, and so social interaction and being social and connecting is so incredibly important for our well-being. And so I think that balance, as Catherine talked about, becomes so incredibly important. We sadly still have some people who don't come into the office at all, and I do worry about that, and I worry about how that may make them feel.
I completely agree, and this is why it's such an interesting topic. Because if I reflect on my career, I know for a fact I would not have been able to get to where I wanted to be without being visible as well. And I think part of my concern as well, and this is open to both of you, what your thoughts on this is, that typically what seems to be happening a bit more is the female tends to be staying home more. From what I'm sort of having conversations, it's the male that's having to go back into work a few more days a week. And I guess my concern is that, are we going to go back a little bit in time? It's got to be balanced. We've got to find this balance, because I think part of when I reflect on my own personal career, being visible, being seen, putting my hand up, like you said then there, Sharon, being able to go to my superior and say, hey, can I just pick your brain on this? Because if I'm working from home, I'm not going to call you because I think I don't want to bother Sharon, she might be busy. Whereas if I just walk past your desk and say, hey, can I borrow you for a sec? I just really want to ask you a quick question. So much easier than trying to do this working completely remote. So I do worry about the career progression, the visibility, of people that aren't coming into the office, because I know a lot of my career progression, my learning, my growth came from working in office, watching people who are more experienced than I was as well, listening to their calls, watching how they worked. I learned so much on the job from doing that. So I think the younger generation or the people that are sort of starting out in their careers would benefit so much from being in the office more, learning from their superiors, learning from, you know, mentors and people who have sort of been there, done it. So it is something that kind of concerns me a little bit. Thoughts on that as well, just before we sort of move on to the next topic. But I think it is something that I want to bring awareness to, that's for sure.
Look, I'm really worried about it because, as we said right at the start, learning and career growth happens on the job. And if your whole realm on the job is just online through a Teams meeting or a Zoom, then your learning is going to be limited to maybe formal reading. And that's okay, but that's not where you really truly grow and experience change in your career. In actual fact, I've had some peers of mine with young kids who have left university and going out and starting their job for the first time, really not liking work because it's predominantly remote, and that if they go into the office, there aren't people around. So work is a source of community. It's a source of joy. It's a source of connection. You know, particularly when you're starting off in your career, that's how you sort of meet different people and new people. And if there's more remote than not, they miss out on that. So, I worry about that as well, Georgie. I think it's a really valid point, and it's something that we must build into the design of what we do.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with what you've both said. I think, Sharon, you alluded to it before there. I'm reading a book at the moment. It's called The Good Life, and it's based on the Harvard study on essentially happiness and what makes a good life. And the single factor that study has shown is relationships and the connection that we as human beings have with others. And so I think, you know, back to what we said before, even if you look at it from a what is going to make you happy in your life, a well-being perspective, it's coming in and having those relationships. And so, you know, it's all the other benefits that we get out of it as, you know, a company and a building a culture and all the rest, but it's actually good for us as human beings on an individual level as well to come in, because like you said, you can't build a strong trust-based relationship, particularly a new relationship, if it is just fully virtual. Coming in and having that one-on-one, that face-to-face time and those incidental conversations, whether it be grabbing a coffee or around the water cooler, you know, walking past somebody in the hallway or bumping into them in the kitchen, that you wouldn't have if you were working completely remotely. So really important, I think, that we maintain that and find the, I guess, hooks in for people that maybe haven't had that a realization or it hasn't been available to them. So how do we include everybody in that? And for different reasons, right? I had a conversation with somebody a couple of weeks ago who's a really technical expert in their role. So doing a lot of coding and deep in the tech world. And the people that are in their team are all interstate. So for them, there's a less of an appeal to come into the office because there's nobody in their team who they would be interacting with in their office. So how do we then expand or bring that awareness to leadership of that department, or you know, are there groups, employee network groups that individual is part of that we can bring them in at the same time, so that they might not even be in there to do work together, but they're able to have that water cooler conversation and human connection side when they are coming into the office.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And it's just so important because my best friend is Pam, who I met at work, and now we've got our own business together. So it's just case in point that relationships you build at work can be so deep, so meaningful, and it's just such a source, like you say, of pleasure and joy. But again, it does all come back to the culture and the people in your business. So this is why it's so important to get this piece right, because then everything else flows from there. The well-being of your staff, you know, the fact that they want to come in, the innovation of your business, everything stems from your people. And this is why it is obviously so important to get that whole piece right. But when we initially sort of started having really good conversations was obviously around the whole D&I space. So Catherine, obviously, I do remember speaking to you a lot around that time, and obviously Sharon as well. So when we first discussed D&I, I think it was just a tick box exercise. It was a buzzword, whereas now companies are actually seeing diverse companies, people who have got, you know, a nice balance of all genders, of all races, of all ages. They're more innovative, they're more profitable, the team is generally more happier, like the culture is better. So I'd love to sort of dive into now what you have implemented at 7-Eleven, maybe some challenges that you've come across, and how important diversity inclusion is to 7-Eleven right now, and what you're sort of doing to really sort of help grow this. So Catherine, maybe I'll come to you first, as you know, I appreciate that's sort of been a big part of your role recently. So over to you, like, why is it important, and why did you sort of, I guess, put your hand up to really sort of want to take a stance and start driving this?
Yeah, so wow, this has been the last year and a half. It's really been the majority of the work that I have been across and driving for the business. So if we come back over 2 years ago, 7-Eleven, I think from a cultural perspective, the way that we operated, who we were in our DNA, every 7-Eleven internal event, and all the things that we did as a company sort of highlighted this inclusive culture and inclusive environment, and celebrated the richness of our people. But from a formal sort of strategy, we didn't have one. So we had a question at the time. I was working with our charity partners, and we had a question from one of our charity partners asking for what our D&I strategy was. And we didn't have a formal written document that we were able to articulate to them. So it's sort of that question had been bubbling internally anyway, and it spurred a series of conversations where it sort of came to a point where we said, yeah, this is something that we need. And so we went on a bit of a journey to research and write and consult with a whole heap of very clever people outside the business and inside the business to write our strategy. And so that includes a roadmap across our 5 years with some targets that we have that we're building towards over the next couple of years. So there seems to have been almost a twofold approach, where we need people to understand the importance of D&I, but particularly inclusion, right? And we've just spoken about, we've given so many examples of why inclusion at work is so important, and why the power, or what the power of an inclusive workplace can actually do for people. But it's also bringing to the forefront some things that, you know, may not be in part of the consciousness of every individual all the time, but maybe some really specific things. So we also had our Out and Proud employee network come to fruition or be sort of born at the same time, where we had a group of individuals in the business who wanted to form this group. We never had a group like that before. And so the advice we got was, yeah, absolutely, this is a great thing to do, and also get out of the way, because those passionate employees will get more done than anyone with an official title or part of their remit will be able to get done. So we've been able to make some big strides, and I think over the last year really knuckled down in what are those little pieces of the puzzle that we need to pull together to make sure policies are up to date, or a strategy is written, or we have resources for employees just internally to be able to access, whether it's external, whether it's internal. But now we're sort of looking to what that next phase is, and it's really around well, what is everybody's role to play in this? You know, can I be an inclusive team member? Can I be an inclusive leader? And what's that impact on the culture in really building inclusion across the organization? So it's a really exciting space, I guess, to work in, because you see the power and the impact that it has for people from an individual level, but also for the whole business in, you know, what a place to work if this is something that we can get right. And it's not something that we're going to get to the end of the strategy and go, cool, we're done now. That's enough of that inclusive stuff. Let's move on to something else. There'll always be a better version, or there's always more that can be done. There's always more that we can learn in the space. And I don't think anyone in the organization claims to be the expert in all things across D&I, but it's a learning journey. And so coming in with the mindset of, I'm willing to learn, I'm willing to ask questions, but also ask for the grace of, there's going to be times where I make mistakes, or I may say the wrong thing, or I forgot to include that option. And so grant me the grace to say, yeah, I'm going to make mistakes, and I will apologize if I ever need to, but I also will learn from those mistakes and be better. So it's not about, you know, finding people and going, oh, you didn't do this right, or this is wrong, or, you know, we need a policy on every single thing under the sun, because policies only get us so far. We've got to have those robust things written down, but we've also got to behave in a way that embodies true inclusivity. And so spending that time really learning about people, getting to know people, and really embodying what that true bring yourself to work, be a human, and just emphasizing human connection is all about.
I love that. Sharon, I'm sure you've got some good things to say as well. So over to you.
Yeah, I mean, Catherine described it pretty well. I guess I'd just put a few extra touches around the edges. So at the same time as we were considering diversity, as a company, we wrote our sustainability strategy. And the sustainability strategy considered the sustainable development goals globally. And in one of those is around, how do you support society and strengthen society, and what's your role as an organization to do that? So our sustainability strategy is more than climate action. It certainly includes climate action, as well as human health and healthy food systems. But there's one around really supporting our local community. Part of that is addressing belonging. Therefore, grounded, our diversity, inclusion and belonging strategy is grounded in a key aspect of our sustainability strategy as an organization. So that gave it gravitas at a board and an executive level. And so part of our success with our strategy so far is that it's completely owned and bought into by our board and our executive. And I think that you can have the passionate people, as Catherine said, but without that buy-in, you can't make some systemic change, which becomes really, really important. So our approach here has always been, it's not a tick-the-box exercise. It's not a greenwashing from a diversity perspective exercise. It is genuinely embedding something greater and better into our DNA. And so that becomes really important. And in business, you need to measure things to make change. And I think having some measures in place and demonstrating, you know, change and that what you can do can change those outcomes is really important to get traction. And I think, well, we may talk about tech-wise, but that's one of the initiatives that have been in place that's really fundamentally made a difference in our tech tribe around the balance of men and women in that tribe. And it's doubled the number of women in that tribe over a year, because we've got an initiative where women in tech can talk. And that's making it sound really basic, but it's really important, because you need to feel like you've got something in common with the people that you work with. And diversity is all about having the diversity. There's power in that, but the absolute gold is having the diverse groups of people feel included and that they belong. Without the inclusion and belonging, diversity in and of itself won't achieve those outcomes for business. And in actual fact, an exclusive environment in many different ways is quite detrimental to people's well-being. So I think the board and SLT or senior executive commitment to this is really important. And we will keep driving to make the changes that we want. The other thing I would add and say is, as Catherine alluded to, diversity and inclusion has been part of our culture. So when we wrote the values and defined those 5 years ago, it was embedded into our culture. So when we then formalized our strategy, it wasn't something that we hadn't ever done before or considered. And so I think that gives you a great foundation to start from as well, and people who really want to be part of it.
Absolutely incredible. And you've made so many incredible points, because it's so true. Like, diversity, great. But if people join your business and they don't feel seen, included, or feel like they belong, they're not going to stay. And then all of the good work that you've just done to get diverse people into the business isn't worth it, right? So you've got to get that right first. And that comes, again, from your culture, from the internally. And Pam and I have a saying, like, start internally before you go externally, and try and get that piece right first. But what you just said as well, Sharon, about the TechWise group, like, absolutely incredible the work that's been done there. And like you said, it's simple. I think people overcomplicate it. People go, we've got to have a policy, we've got to have targets, we've got to have all these things in place. And actually, no, you just need to do something. You just need to start. So just while we're still on this subject of D&I, because there are a lot of people that will be listening to this that maybe don't know where to start. So any advice for smaller companies that perhaps aren't starting off with good foundations, that maybe haven't ever thought about D&I before, what would just be some sort of key strategies or tips that where they could begin, if there's anything that just sort of comes to mind of where an organization, a HR person, or just anyone in a business could begin just trying to sort of get something in place to improve the D&I in their business. So Catherine, maybe I'll come to you again first, and then Sharon, I'd love to get your take on this as well.
It's funny, because I actually asked this question of a couple of D&I, I guess, professionals across, you know, when we first were writing our strategy. I spent a lot of time connecting with people from different organizations around Australia to ask them, you know, how do we do this? What would be your one little gold nugget of advice? And what was often sort of two themes that came out of it. One was, get your senior leadership on board, whether that is your CEO or your sort of head of people or your board. You have to get somebody who is at that decision-making level, who will fly the flag for you, to be a sponsor, an advocate, a believer in it. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to get them to do any work necessarily, but you need them to believe in what you're doing and see the power in why diversity, inclusion, belonging is so important for the organization. And there's so much data out there. We know, you know, whether it's a this is the right thing to do perspective, or it's a actually it makes good business sense, and commercially it's actually great for business. So whatever motivates them or drives them, that's what your argument is. And the second piece is finding just one thing and focusing on that. So whether it be looking at a process and going, is this the most inclusive process that we're running as part of this? Now, whether that's just recruitment, whether that's just one piece of, you know, how you exit interview, how you onboard people, just looking at one thing and supercharging that process to make sure that it is the most inclusive, or one small cohort and ensuring that diversity inclusion is in front of them often. So whether that be training them, but then making it live in their everyday work life. It's not a go to a course or attend a training seminar for 2 hours and, okay, now you're an expert and see you later. See you next year for the refresher training. It's making that live and embedding it in the way that people show up every single day. So not trying to boil the ocean as stage one, but the importance of advocates and sponsors to the work, and starting with just one piece at a time, which suits 7-Eleven quite well, because that's sort of the premise of Agile and the way that we work at 7-Eleven is, you know, finding that's one piece and then laddering from there. And I think to your earlier point, you know, diversity is the mix of people or the mix that we have of characteristics. But inclusion is getting it to work together. And it's in that getting it to work together, the belonging actually comes out. And that's where the power is. That's where the magic is. So starting small and building from there, you will get momentum. And I think it's only sometimes when you're able to then look back and go, oh, wow, okay, we have actually made a difference. 7-Eleven has some great case studies, as we've mentioned, the Open Network, but TechWise as well. When we looked back over 12 months and saw actually the rates of women in technology have doubled in the time that this enterprise network group has existed. Wow, how amazing is that? And now we have a community of so incredibly smart, switched on, motivated, engaged women who get to come together and discuss the challenges that they're facing in their careers, get to connect, get to eat baked treats some weeks. It's really fantastic. But who necessarily wouldn't have met each other in the organization in their day-to-day roles. So they may not work together on, you know, the projects that they're completing, but they get to come together and form that community and support each other, which is really full circle moment on how we started the conversation.
Well, just a very important point in that. I will be back in the TechWise just for a piece of Diana's orange drizzle cake. So I'm just going to invite myself next time just for a slice of that. But absolutely incredible points there, Catherine. You said it so perfectly. But again, hats off to all the amazing work that you at the 7-Eleven are doing. But Sharon, any advice you'd have for businesses that just want to get started, don't know where to begin?
Everything starts with a conversation. So I mean, where my mind was going when you asked that question was what is the purpose and values of the organization? What are they trying to create? And then where does diversity and inclusion fit into that? So if you can anchor it into something rather than do it because it's the thing to do, then I think that gives it more power and more longevity. And you can then find ways to make it more easily integrate into what you're doing for people. So I think that would be my recommendation. Based on you know that question.
Yeah. Amazing. Look, I am conscious of time. We've almost been chatting for an hour now, which is just case in point of why I'm just so engaged in everything you both are saying. But look, this podcast is called Career Confidence, and I think that look, we do get a lot of women listen to this, and they'll be listening to this hearing you both speak so passionately, so incredibly about what you do. When we talk about confidence and its role in our careers and maybe how it's led to some of our success, like any advice you'd have for females listening to this that maybe are struggling to be seen right now, that they don't feel valued at work and that they want to sort of start pushing themselves outside their comfort zone, but they do have fear of what people think and they do have confidence issues. Like what advice would you say? And has there been anything in your career that you could offer that has helped you step up into roles that perhaps you maybe didn't think you were ready for, or just to push yourself outside of your comfort zone? So Sharon, maybe I'll come to you first. Any advice you'd have for females really wanting to step up into their true potential?
Confidence it's a great word, isn't it? And reflecting on how do you build confidence? The number one thing that you need to start with is understanding yourself. Understanding what motivates you, what your values are, what do you truly get energy from, versus the things that become obligatory. I can't even say the word. All the shoulds in your world. So there's a whole lot of judgment, and there's a whole lot of I should be doing this, and I should be learning this, and I should be in a manager role. I really would encourage people to stop and think about, what is it that's really important to me? What is my values? What are my motivation? Understand yourself. And then if you understand yourself, then you can be true to yourself and show up being true to yourself. And then when you are that gives you confidence because you're not trying to fake it as somebody else because it's a should that you should be doing. I think once you understand self and are true to yourself, creating a tribe or a group or a network, Catherine talked about this in her career, that you can go to and be part of. So that should be peers. It should be people that you admire, that you'd like to get advice from, mentoring, sponsorship. But I think creating that tribe really, really does help you build that confidence in who you are and what you stand for. And then finally, I would say one of the things is that not one person has the answer for everything. And so having a healthy level of curiosity and a growth mindset to be able to go out and continue to learn and understand. And as Catherine said, if you get it wrong, who cares? Learn from it and move on. And I think that combination of knowing who you are, having the right people around you, and being curious and not having to be right all the time gives you the confidence to be who you are and then to be a little bit more courageous when you need to step out of your comfort zone and maybe put your hand up for something that is a little bit scary.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Catherine, how about you?
Georgie, I think you could have Sharon on for a whole hour just...
I could have you both on.
I feel like so much of my confidence in my career has come through my mentoring relationship with Sharon. So I would say bring her back for another hour so everyone else
can. We're just going to chat about confidence.
Wisdom that I've been able to get. But probably a few things. There has probably not been one role. I've had several roles at 7-Eleven, and there has not been one role that I have fully felt prepared and comfortable for. And so there's a little bit of you're never going to feel that perfect, you know, I've got this, I know all the answers and I'm ready for anything. It's probably never going to come. And that's okay. And that's in that gray space, in that learning, in that I know that I'll just have this belief that if I don't know, I'll work it out. Or if I can't work it out, I'll ask someone smarter than me and then, you know, use their answer. So I think there's a little bit of just being okay with not having all the answers and backing yourself when you don't. And second of all, and we've touched on this, is that network and building that network around you to, be there to catch you when you fall. And so when you make mistakes, because you will, and I do every day, having the people around you where you're able to say, oh yeah, I mucked that one up, didn't I? But I learned this, and how do you think that I could do it differently next time? Or do you have advice for me on how I can approach this differently? So it's that having that strong trust, that relationships with those people around you to be able to have that safety net or that barrier where it's okay to muck up because we all will.
Love that. Incredible answers. And I hope everyone listening to this feels absolutely pumped and, you know, knows that confidence is a journey, right? It's a skill. We all are constantly working on it every single day. It doesn't just come. People think, oh, I'll be confident. When I do this, I've got to wait to be confident. But actually confidence comes from doing the hard things sometimes and pushing yourself out there. But look, final question. We've covered a lot of grounds on this podcast, which is incredible. But what are you most excited about next? What's next for you both? 7-Eleven. Sharon, let's go to you first. What's happening and in your area, and what are you most excited about?
I'm really excited about, we're rewriting the people strategy for 7-Eleven for the next 7 years, so up until 2030. Wow. So we've got a chance to really shape now what. So the so what, where we've been, it's been a journey, it's been a ride, it's been fantastic, but we've got a chance to now shape what that's going to look like for the next 5 to 7 years. So super excited about that. It will have a fair grounding in well-being and helping our people live a good life, which is part of our purpose, and leading the way in what that actually means for the industry. So that's probably the thing that's making me very excited right now.
Amazing. I have to get you back on to talk about that, and then we'll get you back on 7 years' time to see if it happens. So no pressure. Catherine, over to you. What are you most excited about?
A few things. There's so much happening, right? So I think we're coming up to a stage now where we're getting ready to hit some of our diversity, inclusion, belonging targets as part of our strategy. So that's making me really excited. Bit nervous, but excited. And also in relation to the people strategy that Sharon spoke about, we're doing some awesome work in the leadership space, which We're about to launch a proof of concept in the next couple of months. So what that could look like, or what that could mean for developing amazing, powerful, impactful leadership that is really incredible for not just the leaders, but the organization. So that also, I guess, lights me up to think, wow, the impact that we could have if everybody who was a leader in the business was at that, you know, exceptional level, and had those tools that hopefully this proof of concept will prove out. So some exciting work happening, but some big, big chunky work happening, which is always a good thing.
Yeah. Absolutely incredible. It has been an honor having you both on today. You've honestly come on and offered so much value. So thank you so much. Where can I send people if they want to connect, find out more about yourselves and the work that you're doing at 7-Eleven? Sharon, where should I send them to for you?
LinkedIn is probably LinkedIn. The best place for me, or just reaching out through 7-Eleven.
Perfect. How about you, Catherine?
Yeah, the same. Happy mm-hmm. to connect on LinkedIn. I think when I started this D&I journey, I harassed many D&I leaders on LinkedIn and made quite a good network from there. So always happy to return the favor and connect with anyone on LinkedIn.
So everyone listening to this, you have Catherine's permission to harass her on LinkedIn. So there you go. We'll put her links in the show notes below. But listen, thank you so much both for being on, and thank you to every single person that tunes in every single week. I hope you got a lot of value from this, and I will speak to you again next week. Take care. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoy these episodes, the number one thing you can do to help us grow and keep spreading our mission and message is to hit the subscribe button. And if you have time, give us a quick rating. Appreciate each and every one of you who tune in every week, and we look forward to bringing you many more episodes this year. Take care.